Hello and welcome to another Comics Burst from the Full Force podcast, sponsored by Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, where we take an in-depth look at the newest G.I. Joe comics and related titles of the week with me as your host, Chris Nurse Road Pig McLeod, aka Diagnostic 80. Joining me on this episode is Brian Buzzer's Granddad Hickey. On this installment of your absolutely favourite kind of burst, we look at the fifth part of Paul Aller's amazing G.I. Joe comic from IDW. So without further ado, let's get stuck into this comics burst. The Joes return to Indianapolis, site of one of Cobra's greatest atrocities. Little do they expect to find the city controlled by the brutal Dreadnoks. As Cobra draws closer, the Joes will have to make difficult choices in an impossible situation. Now, Brian, let's get stuck into the covers first off. Now, we have the cover A, which I believe is art by Chris Evenhouse and colours by Brittany Peer, and shows a pretty impressive Jinx, doesn't it?
Loving this Jinx character. The character design for Jinx is just beautiful. Superb, superb piece of character design. And this is a great feature of her. We feel like she's poised on top of some kind of rubble. We can see the silhouette of a city, a ruined city behind her. It's kind of a smoky grey sky. Obviously, the aftermath of some massive destruction. And she's poised, ready to kind of pounce or to strike. And it's just, again, Brittany Pierce colours. We have like the red, the black, the grey. So understated, yet so powerful. Visually powerful. It's just fantastic work.
It's really nice. And a couple of things I'll point out here, because Chris Evenhouse has actually kind of put on his Twitter page like a couple of like Easter eggs that he included in this particular cover. And because obviously it's Jinx, he thought it would be cool to throw in a couple of things. One being, if you can see behind her, there are those two almost like kind of like sword sheaths behind her.
Yes.
And those sword sheaths are supposed to represent like a little homage to the swords that would go in the backpack on the figure, which I thought was really cute, like a nice little kind of touch there. But also something that he's thinking about of throwing these little things in there that, you know, might be noticed, might not be noticed. But he has confirmed that that is something that he kind of put in there on purpose. The other is the way the shadow goes across her face and gives her that kind of mask. And obviously she's known for the mask that went over her face, as in the full face mask that revealed the
absolutely
eyes.
Yes.
And going on here is almost like a reverse of that. So the face is lit up in red. So it looks like she is wearing her red mask and headgear, isn't it? It's really cool.
Genius. Absolute genius. And of course, you know, we have the major red colour cast across the character. That is just superb.
Now, the other cover is even more spectacular. And this is the retailer incentive by Ryan Kelly. And this is just wicked. Have you got this at hand by any chance, bud?
I've got this. I'm looking at this up close. This is amazing. So we've got Stalker stalking across some sort of like girder or something between two buildings, and then down on the street level. So obviously the point of view is like from the ground looking up, and at street level we've got these two vipers looking pretty badass. Obviously on the hunt for our G.I. Joe, who's got the jump on them effectively. He's got the high ground to throw in an Obi-Wan one-liner.
I loved you, Anakin. Sorry, carry on.
You are my brother. Sorry, wrong podcast. Great cover. This is absolutely brilliant work by Ryan Kelly. And again, Brittany Peer on the colours. In fact, I mentioned that Brittany Peer done the colours for the regular cover, but she's not credited as the colorist in that. It's just art by Chris Evenhouse. So maybe Brittany Peer didn't do that regular cover, but certainly on the retailer incentive, it's Ryan Kelly on the art and Brittany Peer on the colors, and it just looks magnificent.
Oh, who does the colors on cover A?
It's just Chris Evenhouse. He's the only credit, so he must have done everything.
That was me just making assumptions. What is also interesting on both covers, obviously we're talking about Indianapolis is the place that we're discussing, because this is where the kind of atrocities happen. This is where we meet as we go into the issue. This is where we'll meet the Dreadnoks. But what they've done on both covers is they've used the Soldiers and Sailors Monument in Indianapolis. In both covers, you can see just underneath Stalker in the gap between the buildings, you can see it there. and then you can see it nice and clearly, the silhouette of it just kind of underneath Jinx's face, effectively.
I love that. It's a really nice touch. It's, you know, again, so subtly integrated into the artwork, and just gives you, you know, just places the action for us, the viewers. So it's a really, you know, lovely detail from the art team on this.
And then, obviously, I suppose we better get into this issue. So following the United States surrender, Cobra's in command, but it was a long war marked by brutal tactics from Cobra, including the massacre of Indianapolis. And that's where we go straight into the story, into Indianapolis. And this is where we meet for the first time in the series, the Dreadnoks. And what's interesting about this setup is that you kind of thrown into this thinking that there's some sort of like, not an assassination, but like an execution going on.
Yeah, so we've got this guy. He's we just get a close up of his eyes, and clearly he's kind of getting his chance to say his last words. And as the camera, as the point of view pulls out, we get to see a little bit more of the action, and yeah, it becomes very clear that what looks like an execution is about to take place. And I love how this is cut with a little sequence of the Joes in a raft or a boat.
Yeah.
Basically stealthily making their way into Indianapolis territory.
And it's interesting as well, because I didn't notice that at first until you mentioned it. So until you mentioned it, I just thought that we were seeing just like little glimpses of what's going on in and around Indianapolis. But obviously that makes more sense, and you can clearly see it's Stalker and Jinx in a boat getting out, and therefore it's them in that little boat going under the bridge, like you said, in that stealthy manner, with what appears to be a bunch of Dreadnoks zipping over it with on their motorbikes, with one of them holding a machine gun up in the air.
But this is a great scene setter, because immediately you know this is lawless territory.
Yeah.
And it's a really nice setup for what's going to happen next.
And then obviously as Zartan, as we see him with his big scarf, and a bit of a redesign here for Zartan, not just in visually, but in as a character as well. There's some really interesting things they've gone for here. One, the Dreadnoks aren't necessarily an enemy force, which is a very interesting kind of ploy. Or, you know, I'd like to see where that goes in the future. Maybe Zartan gets drawn over to Cobra. You never know. Like, we don't know what Paul Aller's kind of idea is for the Dreadnoks. But at the current state of affairs, they're not necessarily the bad guys. And we have here Buzzer and his granddad and Zartan, and they're basically putting him out of his misery because he's just, you know, he's lost the ability to be useful to the community. And one of the rules is, you know, once you lose that, you know, the ability to help the community, rather than be a burden on the society, the very small group of people they have left, they just, you know, take you out. And everyone's kind of on board with this, aren't they? That's the other thing. It's not like people are like, no, I don't want to be killed. They're like, yeah, once I'm past it, take me out. And before they can kill him, Jinx fires an arrow, takes out the gun out of Zartan's hand. Torch, who is now female, that's a really cool Torch design as well, and I think that's Ripper. They both attack with their machine guns into the general vicinity where the arrow went, and that's where Stalker and Jinx appear, and they're like, this is going to sound crazy, but we come in peace.
I actually love this. This is all happened, like, you just described so much action that happens in two pages.
Yeah.
It's incredible what the guys have worked in here. And, you know, we've got this amazing series of panels here where Torch and Ripper open fire. Torch, you know, roars, "Welcome to Dreadnokistan, you slithy scum." You get a real sense of lawlessness, savagery, you know, humans kind of gone a little bit wild, you know?
I like how Zartan calls people no-knocks if they're not Dreadnoks. Show yourselves, no-knocks. I like that.
It's absolutely brilliant. And again, just the posing, the way Chris Evenhouse has posed the characters, it's just, there's so much action in that artwork. He really brings them to life. It's just an amazing few pieces of storytelling.
I like the fact they call him Old Man Smythe as well, the Buzzer's granddad, because obviously he's Dick Blinken Smythe, is Buzzer's real name. So that's again, these little homages which are just thrown in, well, not homages, but just identifiers. So if you're a knowledgeable fan, shall I say, then you'll pick up on that pretty quickly. And then obviously we have, you know, the kind of, I suppose, the exposition, the explanation of you know, what I just went through about, you know, when they get to a certain age and they're not no longer able to help or serve the community, they're, you know, they're taken out. So Zartan basically explains the rules to the Joes in that as long as you do your part for the community, then you can do whatever the knock you want, which I think is really, again, like another little thing that keeps coming up as a funny little kind of comment. So Stalker and Jinx basically get taken in by the Dreadnoks in order to help, or in order to get what they need, which is effectively more people on the G.I. Joe team, isn't it?
This reminded me of V back in the 80s, like in the very early kind of miniseries. There's a moment very early on where the Resistance, led by kind of Donovan, meet up with this other Resistance faction, led by a guy called Tyler, and his guys were way more vicious and savage than the other Resistance. And I wonder if there's a little bit of this maybe in, you know, inspiring some of what's happening here. You've got the Joes, who are maybe a bit more kind of sophisticated in their tactics and their strategies, and they're trying to, you know, make an alliance with a much more potentially lethal group of Resistance fighters.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
And ultimately what we learn is, you know, very quickly that the Joes know that Indianapolis is going to be hit again by Cobra to kind of finish what they started. So their mission is kind of twofold, not only to try and maybe establish that alliance, but to also help and rescue,
yeah, totally,
people here.
Another little thing I want to point out here is that they've managed to get Paul Aller and his dog Shorty in the panel on. So as we go into the mess hall and all of the Dreadnoks are like eating and drinking and what have you, you can see Paul there in the corner holding Shorty. And in actual fact, he's even posted an image that was taken for this, you know, for this particular reference shot. And it's even got the same window in the background. I think it's like some sort of office I don't think it's like an IDW office or not. I can't remember. I'll have to double check with him or see what was on his Twitter post. But it's just really fun how Chris Evenhouse has kind of incorporated that in there and obviously made not just Paul Aller, but Shorty an honorary Dreadnought.
That is an office I'd like to work in.
That is an office you work in. It's just that office that the Dreadnoughts are in has less booze, right?
Absolutely, that's it. And potatoes.
Yeah, it's all potatoes in the bowl. Yeah. So obviously, in this scene, we're seeing Jinx basically ingratiate herself within the Dreadnoughts.
Yeah. So she's trying to win their trust, you know, and she's initially kind of almost horrified that she says, "You guys treat yourselves like animals," and you know, Buzzer explains, "Yeah, like all the heroes are dead, so only the animals are left."
Yeah.
I love how we see Torch throw the table over just for a bet. And, you know, Jinx decides, okay, I'm going to have to win these guys' trust. And she uses her teeth to pull the knife out of Buzzer's sheath. She's got her hands in a very delicate position there.
So she's grabbing the knife and also him off at the same time. That's amazing.
That's exactly what's going on here. And it's just pure erotic. Okay, digressing here. So she has her hands bound, she cuts herself free, and it's like, you know, I'm gonna do whatever the knock I want. Brilliant. And all of a sudden it's like, yeah, come on, someone's ready for their new knock initiation.
She has to go with Buzzer and the knocks on like a you know a ride and shoot kind of thing while they shoot at them, don't they? And so, they have to keep driving and they can't stop.
So that's essentially it. They've got to outrun the bullets. If you slow down, you're going to get shot, and you know, tough luck if you do. So I just want to say something amazing happens here in the artwork. There's a real shift in the color change.
Yeah.
So we have these beautiful warm autumnal colors. We're hearing about this, you know, almost idyllic, albeit, you know, harsh lifestyle that the Dreadnoughts have created. They're self-sufficient, they grow their own food. Zartan is this kind of very caring leader who really genuinely cares and wants to look after the survivors of Indianapolis. And as it goes, cuts back to Jinx's new knock initiation, the colors go much colder. And on that first page, the initiation is cut short because they run straight into a Cobra bat.
And this bat is dark, man. Like, that is some like crazy updated design for the battle android trooper, isn't it?
It's impressive. I mean, it looks, the design is it maybe a bit more streamlined, a bit more minimal than what we'll be used to, say, with the toys. But that kind of glowing orb, like in the faceplate, is, you know, it harkens back to the bat design, but it's a little bit more ominous in its simplicity, in the design simplicity.
More imposing as well, isn't it? A bit bigger.
More imposing, and it's got a dreadnought by the throat. It's pretty scary looking. And what we realise is that that's only a recce drone. It's not even a proper battle drone, but it's still lethal as it kind of immediately throws itself into the Nox. It's got Buzzer in the head with its two hands, and of course Jinx, you know, comes in to try and help, having no impact. And we get a little bit of almost what happened last week when we talked about Real American Hero. A blast to the face is kind of supposedly takes the bat out of it.
Yeah, and then it's laying there on the ground. They're talking about, you know, well, they're basically explaining what the situation is. Buzzer's explaining to Jinx what's happening, and then all of a sudden it starts kind of coming back to life, and they're like, oh, here we go. So Buzzer decides to take it upon himself. He's already strapped with explosives, which is just hilarious for planning for him. I just thought he had a bit of a gut on him, but it turns out he's actually strapped with explosives. And he says, look, I'm going to do it. I'm going to run over there and get rid of this thing. You just get out of here and save the rest of the, you know, whoever else is left, kind of thing. And she's like, no, tackles him to the ground, stops him from doing it, rips the explosives off. They just escape. They run away on foot from it. And then that's when the Joes basically attempt to come and save the remaining community of Dreadnoks. And you get three choppers come in. They try and get everyone on there. They can't take the motorcycles, even though one of them tries to get their motorcycle on there. Which is brilliant.
Yeah, I love
but
that.
I don't care about everyone's motorcycles, just mine, which is cute. And then as obviously they look to be getting away and safely at a distance, Rock and Roll mentions to Airborne, who's flying one of the helicopters, he says, hey, our bat buddy is trying to catch up with us. And you see it running up this kind of like walkway closer to to the helicopters in the distance. And Airborne says, not much chance of that. And Jinx says, I wouldn't be so sure. And you see it take one final like step on top of like the last kind of rail, and it just makes this leap, grabs one of the helicopters, two of the helicopters crash into each other, and then when the other helicopter that got away kind of comes back to recce the situation, to come back and see what's happened, the two helicopters are toast. All of the people that were on those helicopters are now dead, including Buzz's granddad, which was really sad.
Yeah, that's kind of a poignant moment there, as we kind of suppose that the Joes have realized that there's nothing more they can do. Zartan has like, you guys have done enough, you know, we're get out of here, we're going to look after ourselves. And the sole surviving Blackhawk flies off with the Joe team in it, presumably, and we just see Buzzer cradling his dead grandfather.
Oh no, it's really sad,
it's,
isn't it?
That's a powerful moment right there.
And then we also, I mean, obviously we've got Covergirl in this as well. We've got Covergirl, Rock and Roll, Jinx and Stalker. That's the Joe team, and obviously Airborne flying the helicopter. We don't know who else was involved in the other helicopters, but I'm guessing no named Joes necessarily. And then with like you said, with that cradling shot, the like as they leave, Jinx is looking out the window, Stalker says stop. And she was like, I was just, he says, I know, and stop. Stop trying to make sense out of it. Stop wondering what you should have done. It's a war zone, Jinx. And then the final shot is again the Soldiers and Sailors Memorial in Indianapolis, kind of like the silhouette of it. And he says, there are no lessons here. And the helicopter's flying out of Indianapolis. And it's like, geez, man. It went from like this kind of bubbly, upbeat kind of, well, it actually starts quite dark, goes into this bubbly, upbeat kind of story, and then straight into the darkness again, isn't it, really?
I mean, Paul Aller's not pulling any punches here. War is horrific, and he really takes us into some dark territory here. And there's not even that much action in terms of, you know, we're not talking about massive armies facing off here. It's one recon droid effectively causes massive destruction and clearly drives a wedge now between the Dreadnoks and G.I. Joe.
Yeah, that is an interesting point, because I think that's, you know, even though Zartan is now he's a Sierra Gordian, that's where he's from, Sierra Gordo, Rio Lindo is his birthplace, and he basically has been given this kind of backstory of he had a powerful family in Sierra Gordo, and he ended up getting into kind of, not politics, but in diplomatic relations and intelligence for the government. And then he ends up in Indianapolis for some sort of trade mission. Cobra attacked the city. This is the original massacre. And then he ends up staying there to help and fight and continue and so on and so forth. And that's where he builds this other community of Dreadnoks. So it is a completely different character than we've known Zartan in the past. There's no mention, obviously, of anything like the previous Zartan's kind of like disguise capabilities, or, you know, kind of almost like superheroic, not super villain type qualities in you know, enhanced abilities and things like that. So a lot of that is being kind of not really ventured into. So we're probably good to assume that we may see some homage to his disguise, but it's not going to be, certainly not going to be the kind of superheroic, supervillain style Zartan that we've known in every other aspect, right?
I wouldn't think so. And, you know, it's probably worth noting that when these characters were created originally back in the 80s by Larry Hama, I had to factor in play features from the toys into the actual characters. So Paul Aller, in a way, doesn't have that burden. He can create these characters any which way he wants, and I'm glad that he's doing that. So Zartan, I mean, it's very early days in the story. We've only just been introduced to the character, so he may well turn out to be a master of disguise. I mean, we see he's an intelligence operative from in his past life. So there's so much more to learn about him in the Paul Aller universe, but he certainly doesn't have the burden of trying to integrate toy play features into who these characters are. So he's got a lot more freedom in that regard. And, and I like where he's, I like that he's kind of taken that freedom. He's given us something totally brand new. The names are familiar, but there's not much more familiarity beyond that. I really like that.
Yeah.
And it makes this, it means I can come at this with no preconceptions. It doesn't have to link back into any previous version of the Joe universe. And I'm able to just sit back and enjoy it for what it is, which is absolutely amazing storytelling.
Absolutely. And I would also like to say that I see that you could see Zartan kind of going to Cobra, definitely going to Destro and starting to arm up and make the Dreadnoks more of a force now, after this has happened, because he knows there's never going to be a moment where they can just relax. So he's either got to join Cobra or he's got to fight Cobra. And I think the Dreadnoks could become that kind of middle ground where, you know, they could end up battling both Joe and Cobra. That's something that a lot of these things are open at the moment, and I'm kind of interested to see where they go with the Dreadnoks. But in terms of like the overall issue, where does it rate for you? Give us a potating.
Oh, we're going in here full five in this one. I mean, it's moments where this is tough reading because they get into some dark territory in this, but it's just brilliant. It's just brilliant. And these guys are, you know, the creative team on this project are doing a superb job. This is a full five potatoes. That's all I can say.
I agree. I think it's an absolute belter. And again, like, I just, every issue that comes out of this, I get really into. I read it cover to end. I have to like soak in as much as I can and try and see all the different things. Another thing I didn't mention is the hilarious homage that's dropped in there of Nurse Road Pig, which I thought was fantastic. I'd love to see Nurse Road Pig at any point. Oh, would be fantastic. God, yeah.
Can't wait to see that.
Possibly we have even seen Nurse Road Pig. We just haven't been shown exactly which character they play. So
I wonder, is it that dude who goes slop time?
Could be a doctor, a nurse. It could be a nurse and a canteen kind of guy. I'm hoping it's a female, in all honesty. I think that'd be amazing to see a road pig female. I want to, whatever they do, I hope we do see Road Pig in the future, if we haven't already seen Road Pig. Paul, let us know, please, if we have seen or will see Nurse Road Pig, because that's something I need in my life.
I just got to say here, I think, you know, five issues in, I really think we're looking at some potentially award-winning material here. This is really great writing. I mean, there's loads of fantastic comics out there at the minute. This is up with the best of them, in my opinion.
I agree.
But because it's branded G.I. Joe, maybe there's a certain expectation that it should be, you know, telling the story in a different way or portraying the characters in a different way. And the team here have been very brave with the character designs, with the personalities, the character backgrounds. to do something really, really different. And this is, in all honesty, I think this is an award-winning piece of comic creation right here.
I have to agree. I'm going 5 on it as well. Not the Loonies, but I am going 5 on it. And a big shout out again to Paul Aller, to Chris Evenhouse, to Brittany Peer for doing an amazing job. Sorry.
Even the dogs are agreeing with us.
Phoebe gives it 5 barks. Oh, just give me a second while she gets out of her system.
Is that the welcome home bark?
That is the welcome home to Kate. Yeah, when she gets back from work, Phoebe runs out there and she's like, yarf, yarf, yarf. So thanks, Phoebs. Yeah, 5 barks on that one. I think Paul will appreciate the fact that the dogs are enjoying the comic as well. Let's see. There you go. Thank you. Thanks, Phoebs. Buddy, thank you for jumping on and chatting with me about this amazing comic.
My pleasure. Absolutely loving it. Loving this. And just want to say to Paul, Chris and Brittany, loving what you guys are doing. This really is super, super work. Thank you.
That's it for this installment of the Full Force Comics Burst. Thank you to my awesome co-host, Brian Hickey. See you next time. And as always, full force. Or
do whatever the knock you want. You want.
Brilliant. Make sure you get involved with the discussion by liking, sharing and commenting on these videos, and as always you can keep up with the show after listening by following on Twitter @TheFullForce, liking the Facebook page facebook.com/TheFullForce, and if you would like to contact the show you can message us on either of those platforms with feedback or questions. We have also started a Patreon page, so if you want to see your name up in lights on these videos or enjoy exclusive bonus content, then check out patreon.com/TheFullForcePodcast or click the link on any of the posts this podcast appears in. Full force. And a big shout out to our sponsors, Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, located at 601 Business Loop 70 West Suite 263, located in the Parkade Center, Columbia, Missouri. You can visit their website at distantplanetcomics.com and on Facebook at facebook.com/distantplanetcomics.